حاج قاسم هیچ تعلق دنیایی نداشت.
حاج قاسم had no worldly belongings. His only worldly belonging was the Iranian nation.
حاج قاسم از این دنیا هیچی نمیخواست.
He didn't want anything from this world.
و همیشه بزرگترین دغدغه زندگیش
and he departed from this world and his major concern was to take action so that the people would live in peace and calm.
He sacrificed
his life several times for the sake of this nation, and today that marks the second anniversary of his martyrdom. We see this glorious congregation taking shape, and this indicates the fact that the people remember him in their hearts. The enemy thought that through his martyrdom the enemy would be able to eliminate him, would be able to eliminate his influence. But today, by seeing this congregation, the enemy has realized what damn thing it has done, and the enemy realizes that through your presence you have shown that every one of you is like Haj Qasim, and Haj Qasim is still present alongside this nation, and he is observing you. Haj Qasim sacrificed himself and his family for the sake of this nation, and this is the response to his efforts. When we hear what the people say, I feel calmness, and I believe that every one of you is part of the family of Haj Qasim,
and
you still feel grief and sorrow by seeing his picture. And we know that, and we all know that we are not alone in this path. I'm representing my family today, and I'm here to appreciate all of you. Haj Qasim's anniversary belongs to you, and you, the people, are the ones who are organizing such events. And no one can make the people forget him. The enemies spread lies, hatch conspiracies, but the Iranian nation knows its soldier. Haj Qasim did not just speak, he put his words into action, and we can see his achievements today. I'm here today to thank the Iranian nation on behalf of Haj Qasim's family, and I, on behalf of Haj Qasim's family, I kiss your hands, and whatever we have is due to the nation's kindness and generosity.
Dear listeners of Via Arab English Radio, you just heard Zainab Soleimani, daughter of Martyr Soleimani, speaking at the ceremony marking the second martyrdom anniversary of Iranian top commander and the global icon of anti-terror, Lieutenant General Qasim Soleimani. Please stay with Via Arab English Radio.
Access world pays tribute to Lieutenant General Soleimani. Two years ago, millions of grief-stricken people poured into the streets from Tehran to Beirut, from Karachi to Kashmir, to bid tearful adieu to the man they considered their own. Spectacular scenes were witnessed not only in Iran but also in faraway places, as people with moist eyes and heavy hearts carried banners and chanted vociferous slogans against the Big Satan. Social media was inundated with posts paying tribute to the fallen hero, and calls for severe revenge reverberated far and wide. Even those who had never seen him saw his death as a personal loss. Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, the commander of Hearts, who single-handedly confronted the global hegemonic powers and valiantly spearheaded the fight against terrorists in both Syria and Iraq, was a linchpin of the resistance axis and hero for the campaigners of truth and justice around the world. Sajjad Kargili, a prominent political and human rights activist from Indian-administered Kashmir's Kargil city, considers Lieutenant General Soleimani as one of his biggest inspirations. Kargil, a landlocked city surrounded by majestic mountains, saw mass demonstrations following the assassination of Lieutenant General Soleimani and his associates, including the top Iraqi resistance commander Abu Mahdi al-Mohandes, in a US drone strike in Baghdad on 3rd of January 2020. The streets in this bustling Himalayan city of 170,000 people are still dotted with posters and banners eulogizing the 3rd of January martyrs. Kargili said, "Haj Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi Mohandes were the two larger-than-life linchpins of resistance against Takfiri terrorism and Western imperialism. Their strong and unwavering stance against Daesh and its Western backers, including the United States, Israel, and some Arab regimes, has been registered in history." Kargili, who contested India's 2019 parliamentary elections and nearly defeated his main rival from the ruling party, says, "The onus now lies on new generation of pro-resistance figures to carry the torch forward and to disseminate the stories of their heroism." Recounting the role of both Lieutenant General Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Mohandes, the role they played in Iraq and Syria, Kargili said, "These heroes led the fight against Daesh terrorists, crushed it and saved many regional countries and even the West from the bloodthirsty terrorists. They were the saviors and our liberators." To invoke the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, Lieutenant General Soleimani was a luminous example of those groomed in Islam and the school of Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, the architect of the Islamic Revolution. That's perhaps why he caught the imagination of people everywhere in a way very few individuals have achieved in history. Paying tribute to the resistance hero, Agha Sayyid Hassan Mousavi, a senior pro-freedom leader in Indian-controlled Kashmir, said, "General Soleimani represents free nations' resistance to imperialism and autocracy worldwide." He says General Soleimani achieved martyrdom for resisting the sinister plots of oppressors and for protecting the rights and dignity of the oppressed people worldwide. Hailing him as the voice of all nations who are not ready to surrender before arrogant powers, Sayyid Mousavi added, "His supreme sacrifice infused new life in resistance against injustice, hypocrisy and dehumanization." Osmar Shirazi, former president of the Imamia Students Organization, one of the largest student organizations in Pakistan, calls Lieutenant General Soleimani a beacon of light. She says, when we study his life, we understand that martyrdom was sweeter to him than honey. Osman Shirazi adds, much like the young and brave warrior of Karbala, he was named after Qasim ibn Hassan, peace be upon him. The Imamia Students' Organization is planning to hold a series of events across Pakistan to mark the second anniversary of the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasim Soleimani. Mubashir Naqvi, a journalist and media researcher based in Pakistan-administered Kashmir, hails him as a role model in bravery, loyalty, and commitment to a cause. Mubashir Naqvi says he courageously confronted the gangsters of the world, outmaneuvering them in both the field and diplomacy, while being loyal and committed to the ideals of the Islamic Revolution. That made him an iconic figure not only in Iran, but everywhere from South America to South Asia, particularly those struggling for freedom and justice. Sana Batul Zaidi, a Karachi-based journalist and academic, says General Soleimani will be remembered as a hero who decimated Daesh terrorists and made the safe pilgrimage to both Iraq and Syria once again possible. She adds, at one point in 2014, Daesh terrorists held about a third of Syria and 40% of Iraq, and then General Soleimani appeared on the scene. Now is the time for Americans to pack up and leave. While General Soleimani planned the downfall of Daesh terrorists in Iraq and Syria and played a key role in the Israeli regime's disgraceful defeat against Hezbollah in the 33-day war in summer of 2006, he also left a deep imprint in neighboring Afghanistan back in the 1990s. Rahman Malikzadeh, a former member of the Northern Alliance in Afghanistan's Panjshir province, recalls Lieutenant General Soleimani's visit to the mountainous Hindu Kush Valley in the late 1990s and his close cooperation with Ahmad Shah Massoud. Rahman Malikzadeh says, Afghans will never forget what Lieutenant General Soleimani did for them, going out of his way to offer help in extremely trying times, adding, he's a legend and legends never die. General Soleimani avoided limelight and rarely spoke to media. He was a person who deeply immersed himself in his job. Western regimes saw him as a shadowy figure that planned the downfall and defeat of Daesh terrorists in the region while escaping multiple bids on his life. A former CIA officer in September of 2013 called him the single most powerful operative in West Asia. In December of 2014, the cover of Newsweek magazine acknowledged that he was a nemesis for both Americans and Daesh. But he had and continues to have many admirers in the West, like Mick Wallace, a firebrand Irish politician and member of the European Parliament. Mick Wallace says he spent a week in Iraq earlier this year meeting people who are trying to build a sustainable independent state. He notes, the name of General Soleimani was never far from their lips, adding, he was too young to die, but for the US imperialism, he was too effective, too powerful, too good to be allowed to live. According to the Irish politician, nobody did more to defeat Daesh terrorists in both Iraq and Syria than General Soleimani, while the United States and its allies were responsible for the rise of the terrorist groups. News of Lieutenant General Soleimani's assassination on the morning of 3rd of January 2020 was shocking and in direct contravention of international legal conventions. It led to unprecedented tensions in the region and drove Iran and the United States to the verge of military confrontation. Ania Tarkian, an Italy-based geopolitical analyst and Islamic lecturer, says her first reaction after receiving the news on that fateful morning was to cry. She recalls, "On that morning, many cried as if they had lost a childhood friend or a father. It took time to sink in. Some, on the other hand, seemed to have freed themselves of great weight, the weight of their conscience, as if killing those who foiled the destabilization plot in West Asia could stop those who would later follow on the general's footsteps." She notes, the living martyr had on several occasions spoken about his desire for attaining martyrdom. Ania Tarkian says, for those who believe death is not the end, rather a new beginning, martyrdom is not the end of a revolution or a movement, but the strengthening of the same. Iranian authorities have vowed to pursue the case at the highest level and bring the perpetrators to justice. In a statement on Friday, 31st of December, Iran's foreign ministry said, the US government has a definite international responsibility in assassination of Lieutenant General Soleimani and his associates. Afarin Rizvi, a UK-based student and researcher of human rights and international law, says, both international human rights law and international humanitarian law apply under the framework of an armed conflict. Providing a legal perspective, she said, the acting state in this case, the United States, needed to prove that the drone strike that assassinated Lieutenant General Soleimani was proportionate and necessary. She hastened to add, the acting state is prohibited from using targeted killings as a preventative measure. The strike that was conducted in Baghdad did not kill a legitimate target, as it included the premeditated use of lethal force by one state against a military commander, so it constitutes a flagrant violation of international laws. Afarin Rizvi, who examined the extrajudicial killing of Lieutenant General Soleimani in her BA final paper recently, says, America's so-called War on Terror campaign has consistently deprived civilians of their right to life. She added, the United States should have been sanctioned not only for conducting an illegal airstrike and unlawfully assassinating a top military commander, but for simultaneously violating the sovereignty of Iraq in the process.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, what do you call a country which kills an icon, anti-terrorist fighter? Lieutenant Qasem Soleimani was loved by the people of the region as a true freedom fighter, protecting Christians, Muslims, and those of other religions or having no religion at all. He led the fight against the head-cutting, heart-eating Daesh terrorists. So if the U.S. was really fighting Daesh, why would Washington want to kill the man who fought the terrorists most successfully? Unless Washington wasn't really Daesh's enemy. On Saturday, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, met with Soleimani's family to honor him. He said Soleimani represents the secret of endurance and victory, adding his danger to the enemies, now that he is a martyr, is even greater than when he was alive. I'd like to welcome my guests to this program. Jim Kavanaugh, writer and political commentator out of New York. Said Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator out of London.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, welcome both of you to the program. I'm going to start off in London with Said Mohsen. Said Mohsen, if you were to describe Qasem Soleimani, if you were to say who he was, how would you introduce him? What would you say about him?
Well, I think all accounts of those who worked with him, who lived with him, who died for him as well in many ways, all speak of a man who was deeply spiritual, deeply committed to the oppressed, deeply committed to creating a better world. And that kind of commitment, that heartfelt spiritual commitment, was really one which comes obviously from his own religious background, his commitment to the idea of fighting oppression wherever one finds it. This is from Imam Hussein alayhi salam. This is from the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. These are the figures that Qasem Soleimani would have held as his role models. And he lived his life in a way which was, for me, really, you know, we talk about warrior saints of the past. But for me, I think if anybody embodies that term of warrior saint in the modern contemporary, very hard to find anybody who fits that bill. But if anybody did, it has to be Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani for me, because he not only lived a pious life, he put his life on the line virtually throughout his time since his joining of the IRGC in 1979, through the war in Iran and Iraq war, in which he fought bravely to all accounts, and on to his extraterritorial missions further with the Quds Force, which he embarked upon in the 90s, the late 90s, and the evidence on the ground tells you, when you go and actually talk to people on the ground and those people who were oppressed, who were being sort of bludgeoned into submission, the Yemenis, the Syrians, the Lebanese, the Iraqis, all across that West Asia region, Haji Soleimani's stamp is there, okay, and is constantly, consistently for protecting the oppressed. This is the man he was.
Okay. Well, Jim, you've just heard Said Mohsen describe Lieutenant General Soleimani, and of course Said Mohsen is not in Iran, and he's not even Iranian, and so many people throughout the region and in much of the world would probably describe him in the same way. With that being said, what was the main problem that the United States had with such a man?
Well, Lieutenant General Soleimani was an extremely effective organizer of the resistance throughout the region. You know, this is what made him, I mean, he was almost, I presume, and certainly motivated by the kind of personal convictions that we just heard, but he put that into practice in an extremely effective way. He was the one who came in and mobilized the popular mobilization forces in Iraq that saved Iraq cities from being overrun by Daesh, ISIS. And it's because, and he helped to organize the resistance to invasion and by Daesh, ISIS, and other groups in Syria. So for the purposes of the United States and Israel, he was a very effective enemy. And people, he was able to do this because people trusted him. And even American commanders know this. They know he was a very effective leader, and he was able to mobilize people and get them working together to fight and to stop the advance of these, as you say, head-chopping Daesh ISIS forces. So, but they were all, he was also, in doing that, organizing groups that would be effective in resistance against Israeli and American aggression. So because of that, the Israelis wanted him to go, and the United States took them out for him. And, you know, there were two, actually. One should be aware. There were actually, it was another attempted assassination the same day of an Iranian advisor in Yemen. So this is was a part of a military strategy that mirrors the Israeli strategy of killing Iranian scientists. This was kill the most effective military leaders, those who are the most effective at organizing resistance throughout the region. And that is really the real target of all the American and Israeli aggression now. It's not nuclear weapons, which don't exist. It's Iranian influence in organizing resistance in a number of countries to Israeli and American aggression.
Said Mossad. Now, some people think that the assassination of General Soleimani was something that former U.S. President Donald Trump unilaterally ordered. I want to talk about that side of things because that's not really the case. I mean, we saw even Joe Biden, it wasn't that he was sorry that it was happening. He was just concerned of possible effects after that took place. Your take in general that, you know, Washington had basically labeled him number one nemesis in the region.
Well, you're absolutely correct in saying that Donald Trump alone is not responsible for what was carried out, this terrorist act. That's the only way to describe it, because if whether you're a state or whether you're an individual or an organization, you carry out extrajudicial killings, that's terrorism by any definition. And the United Nations has pretty much their rapporteur who did the investigation on this whole incident, the extrajudicial killings rapporteur, described it as unlawful and arbitrary. So, first of all, the entire American machine, the entire what I call Zio-Western imperialist machine, industrial military arms complex, call it what you like, has a say in this this dirty business of murdering Qasem Soleimani. Now, the fact is that you know, the Americans and the Israelis have given themselves a carte blanche. They've committed to something the Iranians today described as excessive unilateralism, granting themselves effectively the power to violate any international law and agreement. Now, once that precedent has been set, it means that we're on globally on a path towards war on a scale potentially that we've never witnessed before. Because if this is allowed to become the norm, then what stops Russia, China, anybody else wanting to also do the same and expect to get away with it? I mean, Iran has called on the UN to take formal action. They said that their legal department, in fact, of the Iranian presidential office, has said all legal initiatives in its power, the UN that it's referring to, should be used to condemn U.S. actions and to discourage similar moves in the future.
So do you think that that's going to happen, though?
Well, the thing is, you know, my opinion generally on the United Nations, that all of these get organizations, these so-called international organizations, largely get funding either from the U.S. or their partners, and a combination of the corporate, financial, private corporate world. Both of those entities are part and parcel of the of what I call, or what Ayatollah Khamenei calls, the global arrogance, which actually perpetrates plunder, rape, pillaging of all of these lands in the first place. So it's a bit like going back to the rapist as one who is raped. They expect justice from him. This is literally what, for me, the UN is. It's just an extension. It's another, if you like, you know, institution of power, or a power institution used by the same elitist forces to subjugate the independent nations like Iran, Venezuela.
Well, let me get Jim back in this conversation. Same question. Do you think that, because Iran is perhaps going to try to, when they talked about the legal ramifications and trying to get those who are responsible to an international court, how likely do you think that that's to happen, Jim?
Short answer, very unlikely, for all the reasons just described. And, you know, that doesn't mean they shouldn't do it, because along the way you're going to get rulings and decisions that are going to, you know, buttress your case and make clear the outrageousness of what happened, okay? You know, this was, don't forget, this was a meeting that Donald Trump, the President of the United States, asked the President of Iraq to arrange between Mohandi and Soleimani to discuss peaceful settlements of things. And it was in that context that both the state representative of Iran and the state representative of Iraq were killed by an American strike. You know, this is calling for a parley of peace and then shooting the people who come to the table. It's absolutely outrageous. But the American government now has instituted, even forget about it, the United Nations. They don't even bother with the United Nations very much. They have what they called the rules-based international order, which is essentially we make the rules and you follow our orders. And they have given themselves, and Israel certainly, impunity to do whatever we want. We see Israel almost daily bombing Syria. There's absolutely no justification. It's completely illegal. So things like this, things like murdering two state representatives you've called on to meet together, and, you know, bombing sovereign countries like Syria daily and weekly, are things that are never brought up before the so-called international community, because ultimately the United Nations is controlled by states, but even they don't even get into
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, again, we are back to the live coverage of the ceremony marking the second martyrdom anniversary of Iranian top commander and the global icon of anti-terror, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. This time, Iranian President Dr. Seyed Ebrahim Raisi is delivering a speech at this ceremony, which is taking place at Tehran's Mosalla. Let's take a listen.
General Soleimani, I salute his lofty soul and I salute his comrades, and I offer my congratulations and condolences to his family. Martyr Soleimani,
مقتدای بصیرت آفرینمان، عنوان مکتب حاج قاسم سلیمانی را،
our leader described the status of martyr Soleimani as enjoying a school of thought. Not Haj Qasem was not just an individual, he can be considered as a culture and a path ahead, and the school of thought.
اگر شخصیت وجودی یک فرد اینقدر توسعه یافت،
if a person's personality is so much developed, then he's not just a real entity. Such a person has been fully developed, and he can be described as a nation and an ummah. The personality of Ibrahim was so developed that he is not just an individual. Superficially, he is considered as a real entity, but he was so much developed that turned him into an ummah. Haj Qasem, by obeying the verses of the Noble Quran, and the tradition of the infallible imams and velayat, in this way he has been developed, and he enjoys great deal of patience. He's not just an individual, he's a school of thought, and such a school of thought cannot be destroyed with an act of assassination or missiles. The school will remain, and it will remain. Imam Ali, peace upon him, When Malik Ashtar was martyred, the Imam Ali said in an enlightening remark that Malik Ashtar enjoyed a prominent personality for Imam Ali, and that's been due to the obedience of God and fulfilling his obligations. He was so much developed, and his path was the path of Imam Ali, the commander of the faithful. The school of Hajj Qasim is in line with the school of Imam Khomeini and Imam Khamenei. He was a man of honesty, and he was attached to God. He was spiritually attached to God. The point that one should pursue in his school is to think and act for the sake of God, to remain steadfast in the path of God. And in order to fulfill a major task, one should just resort to God. And he managed to accomplish major tasks by resorting to God. And in this path, he feared nothing. That's the secret behind his victory, to just resort to God. He knew the superficial might and weaponry of the Americans, and while having such a knowledge, he truly believed that the U.S. can do no damn thing. He truly believed that we can. He did not pay attention to pretexts or the impediments, and that he did not believe in just reconciling, because he was aware of the enemies and he was after countering these enemies. He acted based on such a school of thought. He acted based on lofty goals. He was a lieutenant general. He was a military figure. But one should not just consider him as a senior military official. He enjoyed a culture. And he had the knowledge, the expertise to liberalize the usurped lands. But God had granted him the expertise to conquer the hearts. Conquering hearts is more important than conquering lands. On the day of his martyr Soleimani's funeral procession, the leader arrived at Musalla, and he said that it's like the day of resurrection, and that has been created by God. all the people are just paying attention to this martyr. And in fact, Martyr Soleimani conquered the hearts of the people. This cannot be realized through money. Only God can realize this. He had a lofty soul. The Noble Quran, referring to the companions of the Prophet, blessings of God upon him and his progeny,
Muhammadun Rasulullah, Vallazina ma'ahu ashaddaa'u 'ala al-kuffar ruhamaa'u bainahum. Sakht bood dar muqabale amrikaiya va dar muqabale dushmanan din, amma be ye bachche
it was he was harsh towards the enemies, but when he came across a martyr's child and an oppressed person, he acted in a different way. When he came across oppressed families, and he was the servant of Imam Reza, he came there and he just performed an act of pilgrimage there, and I tried to serve him there. He's told me, can't you do anything for the families of Fatimiyun martyrs? I said, in the name of Imam Reza, I will think about this and I will call you in 24 hours to see what I can do. And we managed to save 60 or 70 such families. He was just trying to resolve the problems of the families of martyrs. The lofty spirit that dealt with strategic issues, important issues. And speaking of diplomacy and the battlefield, he was a prominent diplomat. He was a prominent diplomat that also paid attention to the field, the battlefield. And he acted brilliantly in both areas, in both fields, the battlefield and the field of diplomacy. A revolutionary commander, a commander beyond political factions. He just focuses on saving Islam and saving Muslims and to counter tyranny and corruption, to defend Shia Sunnis, to defend the Palestinians, the Lebanese, the Yemenis, to defend the Yazidis, the Christians, and one who believes in Abrahamic religions. He wanted to repel the evil. He thought about ways and means for expelling the enemy from this region and how to liberalize this region. A person with a major capacities, with major capacities, God has granted a medal for steadfastness, for propagating religion. That's been a medal of patience and tolerance. That's the major medal granted to His Divine Messenger. We have granted you, O Prophet, we have granted you patience. Haj Qasim had the capacity and he built new capacities in the world of Islam. How did he gain such a capacity? He got that capacity by obeying God, by obeying divine rules and obeying the velayat. Humayl ibn Ziyad Nakhai says, I followed Imam Ali, passing the alleys and until we got out of the town, Imam Ali looked at me and said, O Humayl, the best hearts are the ones who have the highest capacities. Haj Qasim became the man of the field because he had the capacity. In Afghanistan, he addressed the youths in Afghanistan. He addressed the youths in Yemen to defend Yemen and defend the region. The youths in Iraq and Syria. He addressed the youths in Iraq and Syria. He detected these treasures. These were the treasures. These treasures were detected by Haj Qasim. And these capacities were used for defending this religion and the region. And that led to the death of Daesh and the victory of the resistance front in the region. This capacity was created by Haj Qasim. They were concerned about the Hezbollah front in Lebanon, but several Hezbollah fronts were created that turned into the resistance front in the region, an international resistance. And this is the detection and identification of the capacities. One should identify these capacities and benefit from these capacities. And in this way, act in a courageous manner and act on the basis in a motivated manner. He was truly a revolutionary figure, and he was not just satisfied with the status quo to say that we are just engaged in an act of a struggle and we're going to present a report about it, but his view was a revolutionary one. He was not convinced, and he believed that he should make utmost efforts, and he did not limit himself to the status quo. He had to proceed. And the international resistance front took shape based on his views, and he enjoyed a profound approach based on Islamic civilization. And he was after creating a civility based on divine values and religion in this region. And what actually harmed the enemy was this lofty approach, valuable approach by Martyr Soleimani. And he was the icon of courage and rationality. He enjoyed courage and rationality. And he enjoyed deep prudence. At the same time, he was steadfast, and he engaged in an act of resistance in order to realize the goal he pursued. And he was not afraid of the dangers. There are so many reformers in this world. One may claim to be a reformer through his poetry or writing texts, but there's a difference. He did not say to go, he said come. And he was on the forefront. That's been the secret behind the victory of the prophets. they tell humans that we have been, they invited the people to pay attention to divine values. He invited, Haj Qasem also invited the people, called upon the people. How come reformers can do nothing in this world? Because they just tell the people to try to improve yourselves. But this will not be effective. The secret behind the victory of divine persons is something else. That was the secret behind Haj Qasem's victory. And he was a person who overcame all the deadlocks. And he overcame all the stalemates. When you come across a hurdle, you should overcome the hurdle. And he did not recognize any impediment. He overcame all the impediments by trusting God. As our late Imam said, and I should refer to his insight. I salute my uncle Abul Fazl. And he was an insightful person. These are lofty features for Abul Fazl. But why is this said by the Imam? Because Haj Qasem was an insightful person. And one should improve and strengthen his insight. In fact, one should be able to detect the right path by his heart, must learn how to live in this world. And this was the characteristic of Haj Qasem. He was an insightful person. And the point I wish to mention to the youths the Americans thought that 13th of the Iranian calendar is the last day for Haj Qasem, but the 13th of day turned into a day of Haj Qasem's rebirth, and he will continue to live and he will remain alive forever. The enemies wanted to have Ashura as the end of Imam Hussein, but Ashura became the day of birth, the birthday of those who were present in the scene of Ashura, and they will remain forever in history. And are going to be followers of Soleimani. The leader of the Islamic Revolution said that Martyr Soleimani will be more dangerous for the enemies compared to Lieutenant General Soleimani. And this is true. And you see that علی اکبر، علی اصغر، قاسم. They become more manifested in the society as the time passes. This is a divine tradition. Therefore, we believe that Haj Qasim's will must be considered as a comprehensive charter of the revolution, and this will must be further manifested. Our society and our generation must know that our general attach importance to velayat, the society, the ulamas, and all social reformers. To see, he said that protecting this establishment, protecting the Islamic Republic, in case it is protected, all the holy shrines will be protected. But if, in case of any harm to this establishment, other shrines will also be jeopardized, and global security would be jeopardized. Therefore, all must make efforts to protect this Islamic establishment in a glorious manner. And you should know that this great establishment brings about our freedom, independence, religion, and prosperity. It will guarantee our prosperity. I also want to tell something to the Americans. Haj Qasim was the official guest of the Iraqi premier. You violated the territorial integrity of Iraq. I'm addressing the Americans. You violated the territorial integrity of Iraq, and you assassinated not just an individual, but you assassinated a nation. This was a horrible crime. What should be done? The murderer, the aggressor, the main criminal, the then U.S. president, must be put on trial, and there must be an act of retaliation, and the divine order must be implemented. If the trial of Trump, Pompeo, and other criminals are put on trial in a fair court, and if they are truly put on trial, that's the case. But I'm telling all U.S. statesmen that a revenge will be taken by the Muslim Ummah. And to conclude, I have to say that all the authorities and officials who are serving in the name of the Islamic Republic, this is a message of Martyr Soleimani for all of us, is that one should take action in order to resolve people's problems and save the country's economy and proceed with the lofty goals of the Islamic Revolution. One should overcome all the hurdles and should believe that we can, and one should consider God's, one should consider God's satisfaction, and also take steps in order to make the people happy.